This is Bird Note. Ornithologist Bill Evans has helped us better understand the sounds that birds make as they migrate at night. Known as nocturnal flight calls, many species can be identified based on their signature sound, like this green heron. Using special handmade microphones left outside overnight, Evans, his colleagues, and many volunteers recorded countless nocturnal flight calls to catalog and identify the sounds. But we're still working to understand these calls. Some are very similar to each other. Others have never been identified. Some of the many modern-day mysteries that biologists face. But for now, take a moment to revel in the beauty of the calls that birds make at night while flying hundreds or even thousands of feet in the air. This clip is from a 6-hour recording of squeaks, whistles, and peeps from thousands of birds passing over a hayfield in central New York State. You'll hear a few crickets, too. Learn more about nocturnal flight calls and how you can record them on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Before it gets cold and it starts to snow, just an itty bitty caterpillar, just a chewing on a milkweed stem. You know I couldn't fly back then, but I began a metamorphosis. First I wrapped myself inside my chrysalis. I grew and I changed inside. I turned into a monarch butterfly. So before it gets cold starts to snow, 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 I'm gonna go, yeah, I'm gonna go down to Mexico. Well, I'm gonna fly, 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 I'm gonna fly, fly, fly down to Mexico. I turned into a butterfly. Nice warm days way up in the north United States, just a sticking out my long, long tongue, tasting flowers in the sun. But winter is on the way, it's gonna get too cold to play. Now before it gets cold and it starts to snow, 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 I'm gonna fly.
Butterfly Song is Marsha and the Positrons, right here on the Children's Hour, where we're learning about migration. And our guest is Scott Wydensaw. We only have a little bit more time with him. Let's go over to Max.
Why is migration risky?
Well, especially for a young bird, it's only a couple of months old. It's never been maybe more than a mile from its nest. Birds don't travel with mom and dad. They travel on their own. Some birds do travel in family groups. Some waterfowl, like ducks and geese and swans, do. But most birds are traveling entirely on their own. So they have to find their way on their own, and they can run into problems. You can imagine all of the natural hazards, storms and wind and predators. Other birds like falcons and hawks are going to try to catch them. And then there are also dangers from people. A lot of birds, unfortunately, fly into windows. Windows, they don't understand glass. There's a real problem with lights at night, especially in cities, because birds are attracted kind of like moths to a flame. They're drawn into cities where they can collide with buildings. So one of the best things we can do for birds during the migration season is to turn our lights off. The other thing that is really important is if you have a cat, please keep it in the house. Cats kill millions and millions and millions of birds every year. But once they make that first migration, their chances of making later migrations for the rest of their lives are much, much better. It's just, it's a really tough learning curve for any young animal, and especially for a young migratory bird.
Does climate change impact migration?
We're just starting to figure out how climate change is affecting bird migration. You can imagine that one of the ways it changes bird migration is by changing the weather. Birds are really sophisticated meteorologists. They understand wind currents and weather systems, and they depend on them. And they need predictable winds and weather patterns so they know where and when and how to migrate. And climate change is changing that. It's making storms more ferocious. Now, depending on what time of the year it is, those stronger, more powerful storms may actually help birds. There's this beautiful bird, it's a shorebird called a whimbrel. Whimbrels actually will fly into hurricanes and tropical storms. Because if you can get through the first half of it, when you come out the other side, you've got one heck of a tailwind. And it kind of slingshots them out into the Atlantic Ocean. And the first time that scientists saw them doing this, they were like, not there, don't go into the storm. But you know, these birds have been doing this for tens of thousands of years. Birds have been migrating for hundreds of thousands of years. They know what they're doing. And if things are really bad, like when Hurricane Katrina came ashore in 2010, there's a lot of birds that migrate across the Gulf of Mexico. And they were like, uh-uh, we're not doing that. We're just going to sit right here. We're going to wait for the storm to go through. And then after the storm passed, they flew out across the Gulf. We could see them on radar.
A lot of these birds migrate to very similar places each time, sometimes even the same tree or nest. What happens if, due to natural causes like a fire, or man-made causes like someone building a house, what do the birds do when these places they used to go to are just completely gone?
So they do, you're right, they often come back to the same place to breed every year. They come back to the same place to winter every year because it would be a risk to go somewhere else. There's a bird called the great knot. It's a large sandpiper. And a quarter of the world's great knots used to stop off at a place on the coast of South Korea. And then South Korea destroyed this huge, huge tidal wetland. And those great knots disappeared. It is important for us to understand that every time we change habitat, we make things harder for birds. The good news is, in our backyards, we can create habitat for migratory birds. It's not hard to do. In fact, the best thing you can do if you are interested in gardening is plant native shrubs, native wildflowers, native trees, especially native shrubs that produce fruit in late summer and fall when the birds need it to fuel up for their migration. You can create islands of habitat in your backyard that can make life better for these birds rather than worse.
What roles do migratory birds play in the ecosystems they traverse?
In terms of what they eat, huge, huge impact. You know, you're talking about hundreds of millions to billions of migratory birds eating trillions of insects. And the fruit that the shrubs and trees are providing, they're not just doing that to be nice. Basically, it's a bribe to get the bird to eat their fruit and then poop out the seeds somewhere else with a little bit of fertilizer that comes along with it. And that's why a lot of fruits and berries are brightly colored. They're often red or bright blue to attract the eyes of birds. It's almost a symbiotic relationship where the plants are providing food for the birds and the birds are providing a service for the plants by spreading their seeds around. Also, a lot of migratory birds, especially when they go down to the tropics, they switch from feeding on insects and fruit, and they'll start feeding on things like nectar. And they're going from flower to flower, just like hummingbirds do, and pollinating the flowers as they do that. You know, these birds are traveling huge distances, and yet they fit right into that ecosystem because that's their home as well. There's no one place that these birds live. They're inhabitants of the whole.
You can learn a lot more about migration and our guest by going to childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. Scott Weidensahl, thank you so much for being with us on the Children's Hour. We learned a lot from you.
I can't tell you how much fun I had.
If you want to learn more about Scott Weidensahl and ways that you can join him on research journeys, you can go to childrenshour.org. We've put a link where you can learn a lot more. This is Birdsong and the Eco Wonders.
Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. There is a place in Baja, Mexico, where the water is warm and the gray whales go to give birth to their babies in the winter time. And to get there, they have to swim 6,000 miles. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. First, they spend summer in the cold North Sea, in Alaska, where there's lots to eat. And when the days get shorter and their bellies get full, they begin to swim fast as they can to Mexico. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. And after swimming down the coast 20 hours a day, they finally arrive at the perfect place for a baby whale to be born, in three special lagoons in Baja, Mexico, where the water is shallow and warm. And when the babies are born, they're already about 15 feet long. And those mother gray whales, oh, how they protect their babies. They keep them close to their sides at all times. They nurse the babies with their milk, and they teach them and love them. It's a beautiful sight to see. And when the babies are big enough, it's time to go back to Alaska, a long way from Mexico. So those amazing whales do it again. They turn around and swim 6,000 miles. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. These whales are so amazing. They make the longest trip of any mammal alive. Swimming and a-breaching, fluking and a-swimming from Alaska to Mexico and back again. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, 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 how far those gray whales go. My, 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 how far those gray whales go. My, 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 how far those gray whales go.
That's all the time we have left on the Children's Hour. Find links, pictures, and so much more info, including our playlist, at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. We're going to go out with Yaniza. We'll catch you next time for another edition of the Children's Hour.
I woke up having a good day. Sun was shining, I got good news in my mailbox. Sometimes I get kind of restless. Think of all the places where I've never been. Took a stroll down the street. The clouds spoke to me, and this is what they said. You're a free bird. Your life is your life. And if you wanna fly,
Children's Hour is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico nonprofit.
You can find photos, links, learn-along guides, and more about us at childrenshour.org.
Children's Hour today was produced by Sarah Gabrielli, Thania Lentz, and me, Katie Stone. We also want to thank BirdNote, as well as our guest, Scott Widensall. You can find a lot more information about this episode at childrenshour.org. Look for Migration.
Find our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to our patreon.com/thechildrenshour.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the Children's Hour podcast.
Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow.
The Children's Hour is distributed by Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.